As we near the one-year mark of COVID in South Dakota, we take some time to reflect. Let's continue now with In the Moment. Next week marks 1 year since the first cases of COVID-19 were announced in South Dakota. We're checking in with community leaders around the state to discuss how they've managed the year's challenges. After the news, we're joined by Rapid City Mayor Steve Allender. And later this hour, are you taking advantage of your employee assistance program? We learn how an EAP can help us manage the anxiety, depression, and pandemic fatigue so many of us are facing. Plus, SDPB's Nate Weck talks the high school wrestling tournaments, and financial therapist Rick Kaler inspires us to stop procrastinating on those taxes. I'm Jackie Hendry, in today for Lori Walsh, and you're In the Moment.
I'm John Wynn with SDPB News. House legislative leaders are delaying efforts to impeach Attorney General Jason Raunsberg. They say a recent court ruling prevents them from holding a transparent impeachment process. SDPB's Lee Strubinger reports.
Last week, Judge John Brown ordered the state to remove law enforcement video interviews from the internet. The videos show North Dakota investigators interrogating Raunsberg after his car struck and killed a pedestrian in September. Republican Speaker of the House Spencer Gosch says the ruling by the Hyde County judge complicates the impeachment inquiry.
And his order that all members of state government not release the evidence included in his order, we felt that public proceedings would be difficult to do. So that being the case, it's best that arguably these premature articles that were filed be held off until the judicial system's able to do its job.
Republican and Democratic leaders in the House agree on waiting until the court process plays out. Raunsberg is charged with 3 misdemeanors for his role in the fatal accident. Other investigative documents, including a 911 call, crash, and toxicology reports, remain online after state officials release them. Republican Representative Will Mortensen is bringing the impeachment articles. He says he's disappointed at the delay, but understands the desire for full transparency. Nick Nemec is Joe Beaver's cousin, who was struck and killed by the Attorney General. He says Beaver would be in prison if the roles were reversed. Nemec is worried the House won't take up impeachment.
And that amendment tells the legislature that they may take this issue up later. Again, spare me the South Dakota government hypocrisy.
A legislative committee voted unanimously on an amendment to postpone the impeachment process. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Lee Strubinger in Pierre.
New COVID-19 vaccination sites are opening soon at major retailers like Walmart, Hy-Vee, and Lewis Drug. It's part of a federal program that collaborates with pharmacy networks to increase access to COVID vaccinations. South Dakota currently has 56 locations, with more coming each week. Secretary of Health Kim Malsom-Reisden says additional locations mean added convenience for residents, but she warns people should still be diligent.
We are not out of the woods yet, and if folks have symptoms, if they have been exposed to a positive case, or they may have been exposed to a positive case, we're really encouraging people to be tested.
Free at-home COVID-19 saliva tests are available. People who are 65 and older and those with 2 or more underlying health conditions are eligible for vaccinations now. Malsom-Reisden says soon the vaccine will open to people with 1 or more underlying conditions. To find the closest participating pharmacy, visit doh.sd.gov. A prescribed burn is underway for acreage southwest of Rapid City. The Mystic Ranger District of the Black Hills National Forest will monitor the burn on nearly 400 acres over the next 2 days. Smoke will likely affect the area during that time. The U.S. Forest Service uses the planned fires to improve wildlife habitat and forest health. They also reduce the likelihood of naturally ignited fires and suppress future fires. Forest visitors are asked to watch for signs that will show the areas involved. Anyone with questions should contact a local Forest Service station. Coming up next, it's hour 2 of In the Moment on listener-supported South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Some businesses in this economy are really small, micro even, and they are feeling it.
My application just sat and sat and sat at the bank. I think it was definitely because I was a small business that my receipts weren't big enough.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Size matters in this economy. That's next time on Marketplace.
Tonight at 6:30 Central, 5:30 Mountain on SDPB Radio.
Program funding is provided by Missouri River Energy Services, working in partnership with our 61 member communities to provide energy and energy services that support citizens and help sustain local business. MRenergy.com.
Getting a hold of your own superhero can be hard, but there is a loophole.
Guess what? The commercial lifespan of most creative works is not that long.
On the next Planet Money, we go public domain diving as our quest to own a superhero continues. And on How I Built This, how Che Huang built a successful online retailer by offering fewer products. That's on the next Planet Money and How I Built This from NPR.
Saturday afternoon at 2 Central, 1 Mountain. Underwriting SDPB Radio enhances your corporate image and projects quality and credibility. Stand out from the competition and reach a quality audience. Include SDPB Radio in your branding campaign. SDPB.org/support.
Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Jackie Hendry, in today for Lori Walsh. We continue our journey across South Dakota, checking in with city leaders as we near the one-year anniversary of the first COVID cases in South Dakota. Today, we look to Rapid City and talk with Mayor Steve Allender about what the past year has been like for his city and what it's like today. Mayor Allender, welcome back to In the Moment. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for the invitation. I appreciate that.
So as we've been saying, next week marks the big one-year date since those first cases. Take us back to those early days and the moment you first realized this was going to be a big problem.
Well, yeah, that it seems like 5 years ago, by the way.
It does, yeah.
You know, I saw the first report of it when I was in an airport traveling, and I kind of mocked it, as I do with many things that I think are never going to make it here.
Mm.
And by the time I got back from my trip, it was more evident that this was going to be a real issue. And the early state that we watched with the infections, Washington, and primarily was the first one I had my eyes on. And when the state acknowledged it, it was clear that we were, well, in hindsight, it should have been clear that we were going to have quite a year ahead of us. The initial predictions from the state were very grim.
Mm-hmm.
And the early predictive models for this were very grim. Of course, you can't model something that you don't have experience with, and this was a new virus. And So there was a lot of trial and error and a lot of learn as you go application here. And so when we started out, we called in our essential workforce, our top management team. We were here in the office 7 days a week. We held daily briefings, gathering resources and trying to figure out what our best defense was going to be. It was very unusual time for us in terms of work. It's sort of like preparing for a huge blizzard, except we know that a blizzard's going to last a day or two. So it was very unsettling in the beginning. And then, of course, there was a time for me within the year where the disease really has become a secondary effect of the whole phenomenon. And I think the primary issue and the lingering issue that's going to go on for years after this pandemic then will be the disruption in our communities, social and otherwise.
Right. I appreciate your point about, you know, hindsight is everything, and it's really easy to forget just how much we've had to learn in a very short amount of time. Talk a little bit about the kind of what you wish you had known then in making some of those early policy decisions, because I seem to recall Rapid City was kind of one of the front runners for some of these different business ordinances and things like this, and then they got lifted before the fall surge. Yeah. Talk a little bit as you reflect on some of those policy decisions.
Well, when you're having to rely on predictions, there's a known risk going in, and we evaluated that risk. We were probably the first in the state to restrict some business activity, and then also one of the first to pull it back. And that was the risk that we took. And I think it was justified under all of the predictions that were being sent our way, both not only from the medical community but from the state as well. Mm-hmm. And so we did that, but we spent all of our capital early on, all of our consumer confidence capital. We were broke after a month of restrictions and made it very hard then to do anything in the future. Yeah. So then we experienced this leapfrog effect of a variety of cities putting in, kind of piecemeal policies and everyone wanting to compare one city to the next and so on. And it was just a rapidly changing environment, and we had, political division, and it was in the midst of, one of the most socially disruptive presidential campaigns in our history. And it was really a perfect storm of unfortunate events. Mm.
We talked with the city manager in Sturgis earlier this week, also reflecting back. And, of course, he talked about the motorcycle rally and realizing no matter what their decision about holding the rally, people were going to show up. And so they might as well be prepared.
Right.
Talk a little bit, I suppose, explain for folks how much it's the Sturgis Motorcycle Rally, but that has a big impact on Rapid City, too, and most communities in the hills, and how that played into the pandemic response for you.
Yeah, the city manager is correct. There was no stopping this rally. I mean, we could have stopped it if we'd have chosen only by putting roadblocks on all of our state highways and interstates, and by forcing the closure or disallowing vendors or hotel occupancy or all of those type of things. And make no mistake, there are people in our communities who believe all of that should have been done. Mm-hmm. We should have shut down every single thing and made it a ghost town during that rally to discourage travel to this area. But I believe only roadblocks could have stopped the Sturgis rally, because these folks were already, six months for some of them, into lockdowns and fear and that sort of thing, and there was nothing stopping them. So I think they would have slept in road ditches if we would have closed everything down, but they would have had a rally.
Mm-hmm. Track for us from the surge in the fall to where Rapid City sits today. What have you seen, and how's the city faring today?
Well, the city, I think we're doing well. In Pennington County, we have right around 200 active cases, which is very low compared to, in the late summer and fall. And our hospital load is very good. So there's a lot going in the right direction right now. So we just finished a week or 10 days ago or so, the Black Hill Stock Show and Rodeo. Mm-hmm. And that is South Dakota's second largest event behind the Sturgis Motorcycle Rally. So it was a big event because many other venues in that circuit had been closed. The Denver show was canceled. And so we got a lot of first-time people here at this event. People from more than 30 states came to Rapid City for the Black Hill Stock Show and Rodeo. So an estimated 200,000 people were here over a 10-day period. And so then you know, the mask wearing, for example, was probably at 1%. Maybe one out of 100 people wore a mask, and mostly those were event center employees and very few visitors. So we're all, you know, wringing our hands and waiting to see what happened, and we're, at this point, we're not seeing a surge from this. We're having between, you know, six and 20 new cases a day, instead of 150 or 200 a day. So things are going in the right direction, and we have, there's lots of hope here. And I think our city has largely learned to accept the pandemic and alter their lifestyle. But the downside to that is, you know, some of those alterations include more shopping online and, you know, less attendance at events. And we're an event part of the country. You know, we draw visitors here. So we've learned some, as a society, I think we've learned some very different habits that I'm sure some are going to sustain. But on the good side, we're an outdoor recreation area, and we had a huge year last year for camping and outdoor activities, and I think some of those habits are going to be important to the future also. Many first-time visitors to our area. So there's good and bad in everything, and this pandemic's no exception.
Right. In our last just couple minutes together, speak a little bit on what you mentioned earlier about how the lingering effect you anticipate is the community disruption. Leave us with that.
Yeah, we are disrupted, and I don't think Rapid City is any different than anywhere else. We've got people with a lot of sore feelings here about how the pandemic was held. You know, half the population thinks we're a bunch of jerks, and the other half thinks we're lazy. And we can see some of this from the anger that's displayed in our public comment times and our city council meetings, and the type of, you know, interaction and behavior we've had. This is the first year I'm aware of in our city that city council members are buying security camera systems for their homes. They're having reports of prowlers and online threats and nasty phone calls and that type of thing. People are very angry and very irrational. And so that's sustaining at this point. And, you know, it appears to be along party lines, you know, and national or state political issues. But this is hurting our communities because we're not meant to be this way. The term community and the way we've been acting in the last 6 months or more is not, they're not consistent with one another.
And that takes time to heal some of those relationships, and that
and
goes far beyond the mayor's office.
Yeah, hopefully we can heal from it. I just question with the new presidential administration and the lingering effects of the former one and all of this, people are getting entrenched in some of these issues. And, you know, I'm a little concerned about it.
Definitely more conversations to be had on the meaning of community and the lingering impacts of COVID. My guest has been Mayor Steve Allender with Rapid City. Always appreciate you taking the time to talk with us. We'll have you back again, but thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Coming up next, we learn more about the Employee Assistance Program and how they can benefit you in these difficult days ahead. You're in the moment here on listener-supported SDPB Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, Dexter Filkins, one of the greatest war reporters of our time, talks about returning to Afghanistan in January. Trump made a deal with the Taliban to withdraw all American troops by May 1st. How is the deal made, and will it lead to a breakthrough or a collapse? That's the subject of Filkins' latest New Yorker article. Join us.
Tonight at 7 Central, 6 Mountain on SDPB Radio.
State House coverage provided by Boyce Law Firm, committed to our clients and building lasting relationships. A broad scope of services from personal injury to commercial disputes. Expertise you can rely on. Experience, integrity, community. BoyceLaw.com.
If you've got cabin fever, you could try asking your smart speaker to beam you somewhere else, but a safer bet is asking your smart speaker to play NPR. Listening to well-told stories can help you feel transported to where the action is happening, and it keeps you feeling connected. When you want to be somewhere else but can't, try asking your smart speaker to play NPR.
SDPB is here to cover what's important to you. Just give us a shout. Ask your smart speaker to play SDPB Radio.
Join your friends and neighbors who keep SDPB strong, become a $5 a month sustaining member, and gain access to a library of hundreds of shows with SDPB Passport. Details at sdpb.org/passport. Business and community development reporting on SDPB is supported by SDN Communications. Learn more at sdncommunications.com.
Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Jackie Hendry, in today for Lori Walsh. The pandemic has impacted everyone and in different ways. If you've become less engaged, more tense, or depressed, have you considered seeking help from an employee assistance program? In the Moment host Lori Walsh recently talked with Tim Hertz, an employee assistance program clinical specialist with Avera, to talk more about COVID fatigue and how to persevere.
Tim, thanks for your time. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you for inviting me in, Lori. I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah, and I think this is a topic that probably resonates with everyone. And when we say COVID fatigue or pandemic fatigue, we're not talking about the medical condition of being sick and trying to deal with some of those really difficult problems. We're talking just about the weariness of the disruption, of the isolation, of washing your hands and trying to follow, wait for a vaccine, all of that. It's kind of been a little bit of a grind. Tell me, from your perspective, some of the things that you have learned about the role of employee assistance programs over the past 12 months, because you've been in this for a long time, but everything has to have changed for you as well.
Certainly. Well, you use the word grind to this thing, and I think at this stage that we're in with this pandemic, that's a perfect word to describe it. You know, in the first months, we were afraid a lot of times. You know, it was tense. Our stress was very high. We were all on pins and needles. Well, we're kind of beyond that whole pins and needles thing, and now it's just this day-to-day grind to get through each day, to remember to wear our masks and to, you know, all the social distancing and all those things. And that grind is really wearing on people and on organizations, on employers and so on. And there are a number of things that have become apparent to me and to organizations that they can do to help just maintain a better sense of wellness and optimism in the workplace. We often use words like engagement or morale of employees, and it becomes very important. And the first is, to me, a sense of gratitude, and that could be gratitude on the part of the employer, certainly, and also the employee. But the employer can express gratitude to their employees for the sacrifice, the commitment.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to In the Moment on SDPB Radio. My guest is Tim Hertz. He is an employee assistance program clinical specialist with Avera. And of course, as we talk about all the disruptions of the pandemic, we get our disruption of our own. So we're going to bring him back on the program here in just a minute. And it's an opportunity to talk about patience and grace, as so many of us have been dealing with that this year. Here's what's coming up a little bit later in the program. Seth Tupper is going to join us for Why Is That? And it is a look at the Bison Center at Custer State Park. You'll get a little history here in just a moment. But I think Tim Hertz is back with us. Hey, Tim.
Hello, boy.
Isn't that perfect?
Yes. Just, it all got dropped for some reason, unfortunately.
So I am just, will express my gratitude at how infrequently that has happened over the past year as engineers and whoever the people are who are keeping us connected. A little hiccup there. So you were saying, you were talking about gratitude and the sacrifice and the commitment, and that's when we lost you. Why don't you pick it up there?
Right. Employers can express that sense of appreciation for all that employees bring and the, you know, what they're doing to try to help a company move forward, right? And that becomes very important to express that clearly and consistently. It can be done multiple times in different ways, and companies have ways of communicating with employees, and it's important to take opportunities to do that, not let employees forget that. But when employees have gratitude for their employees or for their employers and everything that it, you know, exists in their life, we know that people have a better sense of overall wellness. That's borne out in studies and so on. And so just maintaining a sense of gratitude for, you know, the things that are in life and amongst our life, it becomes very important. Another really important topic is generosity. Employers can be generous, and we've heard reports of generosity of employers in many ways. It can be financial. We've heard about employers who have financially gifted money, have given bonuses, so to speak, to their employees through this pandemic. And that's really generous, but that's not possible for every employer. But they can be generous in caring for their employees, showing empathy, thanking them, like I said before, just, you know, bringing in lunch once in a while for employees, whatever it might be. But just that sense of we're giving back, we're contributing, we're trying to smooth this out and make it better for you.
Yeah.
Another important. Go ahead.
I want to jump in before you go on and ask you a couple questions. And one of the things is, as I, you know, we do so much coverage of the pandemic and politics and, you know, with everything from impeachment to the State House. And every once in a while, I'll be on Twitter and I'll see somebody, one of the people that was on the show often, for example, who was talking about topics like this, you know, wellness and, you know, gratitude and things that we talked about before the pandemic. And I've been asking myself, are those things a luxury that we talk about when things are basically good? Because sometimes it's hard to make time for some of those things when there's so much like hard-hitting news happening. And that might be a specific thing in journalism, but I'm guessing it applies to your work too, in the sense that, so my question to you is, working with your employees on that better sense of wellness, that engagement, that morale, is that a luxury for when things aren't as tense and as stretched so thin as they are now?
I think it's essential that, you know, we do what we can right now. Morale is really, or engagement is really under pressure through all of this. I've very recently was talking with a human resources person who called us, who wanted to consult with us and get some ideas, because through this, well, before the pandemic, they talked about how engaged and positive the atmosphere was in the workplace. But through this pandemic, they've had to terminate people, let people, you know, do some rotation of layoffs, that kind of thing, furloughs, as we call them, and so on. And it has created this negativity in the workplace for them, and they want to get that positive vibe back again. And so we really have to work hard at, you know, finding ways to, you know, bring that positive energy back into the workplace, because employees who are engaged and feeling good and doing well are more productive.
Yeah. 3 million women have dropped out of the workforce last year. This is gender neutral when we talk about wellness and employee assistance program, but I'm specifically wondering, about families who have had mm-hmm. to make different choices because their kids are at home. Obviously, this, according to these statistics, disproportionately affects women, but it's certainly affecting the whole family if those women are not earning, not saving yes. for retirement. Mm-hmm. What about some of those massive disruptions that we're seeing in with education and loss of childcare and in-school time over the past year? Talk about that a little bit, please.
Well, yes, we know that the pressure that employees are under, it comes home, and it's affecting everybody. We have heard a number of people, many times we've done surveys and things like that, and one of the things that's happening is more substance abuse, more alcohol intake by a lot of people. And when that's happening, when people are impaired at home, it really begins to affect relationships. Of course, it's very hard on relationships, and so that's really a concern. And so we also hear about anxiety and sleeplessness that's brought on by that, and people constantly worrying, and now it turns into depression because the sense of optimism is just gone. They're mm-hmm. dreading what the future brings for them, and that's very, very hard on families. Children are impacted by that. The relationships amongst couples are certainly impacted by all those things in a very negative way.
Yeah, I know people who have just divided their house in two, and they're living in separate parts of the house right now. That's how desperate it is.
It's heartbreaking.
When managers are dealing with their employees, though, there is that line, you know, how much do you want to ask a person about what's happening, you know, how much is your business? Talk a little bit about management versus these employee assistance programs and when managers should, you know, be there with gratitude and support and kindness mm-hmm. and thoughtfulness, and when mm-hmm. they must be referring to these professional mm-hmm. services. Talk about that, please.
Well, the frontline managers know what their employees are like when things are going well for them. They see the positive communication and the looks on their faces, and they just, you know, they sense what people are like, and those managers can watch for changes. When that sort of optimism disappears, when people are complaining, when they're showing up late for work, there's absenteeism calls, and people start sharing about the problems in their personal lives. It starts coming out, and so when they see that, that's a time to approach the temptation, or the sort of the first reflex is to avoid that person who is showing signs of stress. We don't want to be around that. We don't want to interfere or pry too much, violate their confidentiality, but really that's the time to step right in and say, I notice that something's not right with you. What's going on? And through that conversation, shape it towards, remember, we have resources for you in our community, in our benefits, whatever it might be, to help you. And I sure would like to see you take that step. And I can even help you make that first phone call if you'd like. You know, something like that that helps them connect up with helping resources. As an EAP, that's often how employees get to us first, because a manager cared enough to say, I'm concerned about you. Let's get you some help.
Tim Hertz is an employee assistant program clinical specialist with Avera. Great talking to you today, Tim. Hopefully you'll come back with us with other focused topics that we can continue in the future. Thanks for being here with us.
Thank you very much.
You can find all of our past segments at sdpb.org/news or by following the In the Moment segments podcast. Coming up next, we catch up with SDPB's Nate Weck and talk high school sports in South Dakota. You're in the moment on listener-supported SDPB Radio.
Thanks to your support, South Dakota Public Broadcasting is able to bring you live coverage of high school sports and fine arts events. We take pride in shining the spotlight on achievements of students in the classroom and on the stage. Support SDPB now and help us continue to offer high school sports championships and all-state music presentations. Donate at sdpb.org/donate.
The economy is rebounding, but long-term unemployment is still the worst it's been since the Great Depression.
The magnitude of the problem is huge. I'm incredibly worried that we're not investing in workforce development.
I'm Ari Shapiro. We meet some of the millions who've been out of work for months this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Listen beginning at 3 Central, 2 Mountain on SDPB.
I'm Callum Borchers.
And I'm Tanya Mosley. FBI Director Christopher Wray testified that extremism is a problem across the country, with conspiracy groups like QAnon proliferating on social media. We'll discuss.
And the governor of Puerto Rico makes his case for statehood. That's next time on Here and Now.
This afternoon, beginning at 1 Central, noon Mountain, on SDPB Radio.
Program funding provided by the South Dakota Humanities Council, presenting Voting, Why It Matters, featuring virtual events with authors, activists, and scholars, including Gloria Steinem, Louise Erdrich, and Thomas E. Patterson. More at sdhumanities.org.
After experimenting with electronic avant-garde, Herbie Hancock came to feel that he'd been spending too much time with far-out spacey stuff, and he wanted to get back down to Earth. Inspired by Sly and the Family Stone, Hancock assembled a new band and recorded Headhunters, an album with a relaxed, funky groove that jazz purists hated, but millions of record buyers loved. I'm Carl Gerke, and this evening on Jazz Nightly, we'll hear the album's key track, Chameleon. You can join me at 8 Central, 7 Mountain.
Quality news reporting is more important than ever. Your financial support is more important to us than ever. Support radio that's important to you. Become a member of SDPB today. sdpb.org/donate. Sports and recreation reporting is supported by Horton Incorporated of Britton, South Dakota.
Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Jackie Hendry, in today for Lori Walsh. Less than a week ago, South Dakota high school boys and girls wrestling teams competed for their state titles. SDPB's Nate Weck was on hand to witness all the action. In the Moment producer Chris Loffrey brings us this conversation.
This past week, West River was all abuzz with the South Dakota High School State Wrestling Championships. SDPB's Nate Weck was there. Hello, Nate. Thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
Hey, Chris. How's it going?
It's going fine. How are you?
Doing well.
Take us inside the venue. Where were you? Set the tone by describing the environment prior to these matches getting underway.
Yeah, well, you know, for the last 5 or 6 years that I've been working for South Dakota Public Broadcasting, the state wrestling championships have consisted of both the A and B classes inside of the same venue. This year, because of COVID and because of the protocols of trying to limit as much crowd, audience, whatever you want to call it, that's on top of each other at the same time, a decision was made to split up Class A and Class B into separate venues. Well, Rapid City, much like Sioux Falls, has a complex that has two venues on its complex. So at the Rushmore Plaza Civic Center, you have the Barnett Arena and you have the Ice Arena currently that they can use as far as two venues. So that's what they decided to do. They stuck the Class A wrestling class in the Ice Arena, and then Class B was over in the Barnett Arena side of the Rushmore Plaza Civic Center. So that was the first thing that was super glaring walking into it, because we're so used to seeing 8 mats on the floor. So to walk in and see 4 and then have to walk over to another venue through the concourse area of the Rushmore Plaza Civic Center to get to the other one and then see another 4 mats, that was kind of strange and different. But honestly, Chris, once it started on Thursday, it felt pretty much, to me at least, as normal as it possibly could be.
Very interesting. Did anything stick out, if you will, outside of what you just said? Did anything stick out that's like, whoa, I've never seen that here before? Anything like that?
If you think back to last year, South Dakota hadn't had any active cases that were reported yet of COVID-19. So it was a little different and unique to see, wrestlers running around the map, warming up and stuff like that with masks on. It just looked a little different than, that they're going to have masks on as, at certain times and things like that. But then when you finally see it, you're like, oh yeah, we are still in a pandemic, because it does at times feel normal. And then little hints like that kind of bring you back to the reality of the situation that we're living in today. But yeah, that was the one thing that was different to me, because last year, if sports fans remember correctly, wrestling was one of the events that actually took place as normal. And on championship night of the championship session on Saturday night of state wrestling last year actually had a record of like 8,300 people that were in attendance for it. So if you think back to that and let that soak in, it's actually pretty remarkable to see how things looked, 1 year in advance.
And we'll get to the results and who won and thus in just a few minutes. If you're just joining us, we're talking with SDPB's Nate Weck. We're talking about the South Dakota High School State Wrestling Championships that took place this past Thursday, Friday, and Saturday in Rapid City. Now, Nate, March is Women's History Month, and even though the matches themselves didn't take place this month, I just wanted to acknowledge that. And I bring that up, Nate, because it was a monumental year for girls in the sport of wrestling. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, this was a big time moment here for girls in the state of South Dakota at the high school level with the sport of wrestling. There's been conversations the last few years about, should we have a sanctioned division of girls wrestling at the high school level in South Dakota? And it was decided here this last off season, I guess you could call it, basically the time in between wrestling last year and wrestling this year. But it was decided that, talking with coaches, there's enough interest from girls that they've spoken with that, yes, this might be something that we should do. So the Wrestling Advisory Committee started there, and they decided, yes, I think it's time to start a girls wrestling division in high school wrestling. And it moved on to the executive board, and the executive board of the Activities Association said, yep, this is something that we want to do. So there you have it. South Dakota became the 25th state in the nation to implement a sanctioned division of high school girls wrestling. And it was really cool, because there was 88 girls, I believe, that were there. There was 47 in one class, 41 in another. Don't ask me which ones, because I keep getting them goofed around as to which one had six more. But there was 88 total girls that were competing. And you knew when those first girls took the mat on Friday morning, because there was no girls wrestling on Thursday, but on Friday morning at 10 a.m. Mountain Time, the first girls took the mat, and they made a special announcement for it. You knew at that time that you were witnessing something that was truly historic. These girls are trailblazers, and they're going to be able to tell their grandkids someday that I was part of the very first girls wrestling division that wrestled at a state wrestling tournament. And it was really cool. I took a step back and just watched it for 5 minutes rather than trying to think of the results and all this type of stuff, just because I wanted to experience that as a fan. Because no matter what happens as far as, tournaments and stuff like that, and things get busy, there's always a time where I look back and I go, but the reason I love my job is because I'm a fan first. So it was one of those moments where I just took a little bit of time, took a deep breath, and realized that we were witnessing something that was truly remarkable and special. And it's such an iconic moment. And yeah, so now we have girls wrestling in the state of South Dakota, and talking to the people I talked about, Chris, it sounds like that there's going to be even growing interest in the future, and the future could even be brighter with that sport on the girls' side. So we certainly look forward to following that and seeing how this sport continues to grow on the girls' side. And who knows, maybe we'll have one weekend that'll just be dedicated to girls' high school wrestling someday.
SDPB's Nate Weck witnessing history as far as wrestling goes here in South Dakota. Let's move on to Class B. Tell us about Class B.
Yeah, well, it's kind of the same story as last year as far as Class B wrestling in 2021. I don't want to say you could just copy and paste things over, but last year, Canton won the duels, the team duels on Friday night, and then they also won the individual team championship on Saturday night. The same exact thing happened this year. Canton won the team duels on Friday night, and then they won the individual team title on Saturday night. And for Canton, this it's you know, I don't want to say we're witnessing history here as well, but what Canton is doing as far as wrestling is they've created a dynasty. I think they had 16 girls wrestlers even go out this year. So we're talking about, you know, a community that just lives and breathes high school wrestling and even wrestling at younger ages, you know, getting kids invested in sport at a young age. And, you know, just to see that, yes, this is their fourth straight state title, you know, it's something that adds up pretty quick. Last year, they broke the record last year for team points at a state tournament event with 240.5, I believe it was. And that beat like a Sturgis record back when the Sturgis dynasty was going on. So for Canton to do what they've been doing, and, you know, looking at their roster and stuff like that, you know, they're going to lose a couple kids, but they're going to be really, really good again next year. So Canton's definitely a team to watch as we progress. You know, we talked about, I did mention team duels a little bit there with Canton because Canton won the back-to-back titles there with team duels. This is only the second year that team duels has been back since a significant break. But team duels on the A side, Pierre ended up getting the victory over Rapid City Stevens. Stevens won the team duels state title on the A side last year, and it actually came down to the very final match. I believe Stevens had a 3-point lead. You get 6 points if you have a flat out pin, and Pierre got the pin, so they ended up winning by three. So it was kind of a cool moment to see, you know, Stevens just had to play conservative, but they still had to win because it's hard to protect that lead. You can't really play to protect that lead when you might lose it. And then, you know, the wrestlers, you know, they just get caught and Pierre comes out with a pinfall there in the final match of that team duel. So that made it really exciting. And then really on the A side of it, Chris, that really stuck out to me as far as the overall team title perspective. And that's on Saturday night, Brandon Valley won their first wrestling title. And it was also, you know, get this, it was also the first time that a school from the Sioux Falls metro area had won a state wrestling title since Sioux Falls, Washington in 1972. If you do the quick math on that, 49 years. And you think about it, you know, Stevens has had some really good programs. Pierre had a bit of a dynasty. You go back to the Sturgis dynasty, and you start looking at all of these wrestling programs in the state that had their own era, and it's right, there are no Sioux Falls schools that had that dominant era at all here in the last 5 decades. So in Brandon Valley, they were close last year. They were runner-up right behind Stevens last year, I believe it was. And for them to get the victory this year, you know, props to them. They had some really talented wrestlers. So, yeah, they break that 49-year drought. And it's not even really a Sioux Falls school, but if you want to count the Sioux Falls metro, I would definitely include Brandon Valley into that conversation.
In about the minute we have left, first of all, congratulations to all the South Dakota boys and girls in the wrestling state championships. What's up next for South Dakota High School Sports and Activities, Nate?
Well, it kind of starts off this weekend because we have the state debate event that's taking place. It's going to be a virtual event this year, so very similar to what we saw in December with the State Oral Interpretation Festival. And then after this week, we've got two back-to-back weeks of basketball. We got girls state basketball the 1 week, and then followed by the boys state basketball championships the next. And then we actually cap off the month with the All-State Band Concert. So you want to talk about a busy month for not just the Activity Association, not just for us, but, you know, there's so many kids that are involved in all of these sports and activities as well. And I call it the best time of the year because I truly believe it is the best time of the year. So the only thing to do is just push forward, and before you know it, you'll blink and it'll all be over. So it's all about just enjoying the moments as we move forward.
SDPB's Nate Weck, always enjoy the time. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
To follow SDPB's sports coverage, visit sdpb.org/sportsblog. Facebook page is SDPB Sports, and Twitter account is at SDPB Sports.
It's all about the money.
Time of year, many of us engage in a little more procrastination than usual. So let's listen back to a recent conversation with Rick Kaler, financial therapist from Rapid City, as he motivates us to do something most of us dread, taxes.
It really brings out a lot of the emotion is when people think of taxes. You know, we have found that the average person has 50 to 200 money scripts operating 24/7. A lot of times we're unaware of those or subconscious. It's when we work with folks, a large number of those money scripts or fraction can be due to taxes.
All right, let's go through some of these one by one. And the first one I'm sure you remember or have learned by now is one of my favorites, which is, because it hits close to home, which is money avoidance.
Yeah, absolutely. A money avoider, just in review, believes that money is bad. It's anxiety producing for them. Oftentimes the money scripts that the rich people are greedy. I find the main emotion around that can be fear. You know, a lot of avoiders believe that they don't deserve money. I was talking with one of my associates today, and he said, oh yeah, I once had a client that just decided the way they were going to handle their taxes is not pay them at all. And this was a client that owed millions of dollars and would say, yeah, I looked at that file and I just put it down. And I didn't look at it till next year. That's pretty severe avoidance when you just don't even pay or file. There's a lot of messages that go with that. Like, I'm incompetent. I don't understand this. I don't enjoy it. I don't want to deal with it. I don't even want to look at it. And a lot of that can be driven by fear and messages around that.
Here's the way that I have dealt with that regarding taxes. And that is, I found a tax preparer who is a really nice woman who I like to go see once a year. And so then I don't think about it being taxes. I think now I get to go see her. Won't that be nice? And then, and then I will show up. Are there other ways for avoiders to kind of confront some of those beliefs or feelings so that they can move forward with the work that really does need to be done?
Yeah, what you've come up with is a really great way for an avoider to handle. Let somebody that loves to do it, do it. A lot of it can be just looking at, what am I afraid of? What is it that money represents to me? Where did that start? Where did that come from? Just starting to try and understand the root of the message and the emotions behind it can start some movement to putting in a different behavior in place. And maybe that's gathering all the receipts monthly or doing some things that make it easier when tax time comes around.
All right. How about for people who have money status as their primary belief?
Yeah, these are folks that equate their net worth with their self-worth. So they can believe that people aren't only as successful as the money they earn. And their main emotions can be pride and insecurity. When they think about taxes, they can have thoughts that come up. They can be very proud about the taxes they pay. They can also feel really prideful that they can hire the best professionals and pay less in taxes, kind of like another status type of a thing. They can also take on the idea of, let me tell you all the ways that I avoid taxes.
People who worship money a little bit, how is that different?
Yeah, so they believe that things would always be better if I had a little bit more money, or that money is going to make me happier, or money will solve all of my problems. I think their main emotion is anger. And at tax time, they do not really appreciate the government taking away their money. And here is a really curious one. This particular type can want to avoid paying taxes at all costs. In other words, they are willing to have less wealth in order not to pay taxes.
Oh.
And you don't have to have a lot of money to be in this category. We see clients that are upset they don't have a mortgage payment anymore. Write-offs are good, right? So let me go spend a dollar so I can write off and save 10% of it, 20% of it in taxes. That makes no sense. You're still out the other 80 cents. But it makes sense when the script is paying taxes are bad and I will go to any extreme not to pay taxes. That money script gets in the way of doing financial planning all the time.
Money vigilance. Tell me about that. These are the people who are ready for tax season.
Oh, yeah. they're the folks that save. They save their receipts. They know what exactly is happening. Their main emotion is anxiety. And their thoughts are like, just anxiety around doing the taxes right, filling it out, getting it in on time, probably early. Sometimes it makes lots of sense to extend, right? You can extend your paying your taxes till October 15th. And there's some evidence that would suggest that your audit chances are lower if you file on October 15th. A money vigilant can hardly fit with that thought because they want to get it done. They want to get it over with. They want it to be correct. So they triple check everything. They often do their own taxes, which can actually result in them paying more in tax because they can be very secretive around letting anybody know what they make and what they're worth. So, and they also have scripts like tax preparers cost so much money. I'll just save that money.
Sure. Are there, you know, accountants or CPAs who are interested in financial therapy as well?
I do believe that there's some financial therapists that have been CPAs, but I don't know of a practicing CPA who's also trained in financial therapy or is a financial therapist as such. I'm sure it's not going to be too long. Someday you may go into your CPA and that they'll have the financial therapy division.
I'm sure I'm not the only person who has ever been stressed out or shed a tear or gotten in an argument over taxes. It's a difficult time of year. So like now I know that I have a name for something. How do I sort of process feeling some of those feelings?
Yeah, there's a number of ways of processing. It's just huge to be able to first name the feeling that you're feeling, whether it's anger or fear or anxiety. And then some things that can work is like journaling, like what's coming up around this? To try and get to those are original thoughts that they came, where they came from. Maybe they've come from family. For a lot of us, getting to the emotion, separating the emotion from the reaction, like, why is it so important for me to pay no tax? What is that message? What is the feeling behind the message, which is so important to get to? And of course, if there's a financial therapist on your block, it's a good person to go try and process this with.
Rick Kaler is a financial therapist and author from Rapid City. That was his conversation with In the Moment host Lori Walsh.